Hi, hello, and happy new year from the Dunker Spot. We have a fun episode coming your way. We check in with a couple of five seeds as of recording. The Los Angeles Lakers, 20 wins, top tier offense. Defense, we got some questions. How good is this team? How realistic is it for them to fix some of their problem areas? Out east, the Philadelphia 76ers, 4 games above .500 right now. Tyrese Maxey's been fun. VJ Edgecombe's been fun. Joel Embiid starting to find himself. How real is this? We dig into it. We talk about the top tier scoring season of Jaylen Brown, what he's done to help lead this Boston Celtics group to a top four seed as of recording. And then the unrivaled season is kicking off on Monday. We have some quick thoughts, some questions to help get you ready for the season. We hope you enjoy. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network and the new Yahoo NBA YouTube channel, so subscribe if you haven't already. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy new year. How are you?
Happy new year, brother. Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. New year, new me, same old Dunker Spot. So ready to talk some basketball with you, big dog.
We're going to have some fun talking some hoops. And Steve, we're taking the temperature on a couple of teams that are coincidentally both ranked fifth in the conference right now as of recording. I'm going to talk about the Los Angeles Lakers, one of the more intriguing teams in the Western Conference right now. We're going to talk about the Philadelphia 76ers, who is also one of the more intriguing teams that we have in the league. In a very general, what are we to make of these two teams right now? Are they exceeding expectations? Are they underperforming in any way? How real are they as playoff teams as we project ahead? Just wanted to dig in because we've talked around them a little bit. We've talked about specific players that have played well. Luka, Austin Reeves, get well soon. Tyrese Maxey, VJ Edgecombe. Let's take a deeper dive into both of these teams. So let's start out west. Let's start with the Los Angeles Lakers. As of recording, they are 20-11, fifth in the West. Per Cleaning the Glass, they are seventh in offense. They are 24th in defense. They are 16th in net rating. They currently have a slightly negative point differential per Cleaning the Glass, which is interesting to me with a team with their win-loss record right now. As I think, as we had our season preview heading into the year, we were both of the mind, this could and should be an elite offense. When you have Luka Doncic, Austin Reeves, LeBron James, these are three guys that can dictate terms offensively, can poke at different matchups, and force defenses to rotate. Broader strokes, not sure what the defense is going to be. There were positive stretches last season with their switching, with the kind of help that they showed behind their switching. You know, post-Luka trade, they were one of the best defenses in the league, though teams missed all the threes. So, like, that may not have been as accurate as the stats to depict, but they had stretches of solid defense to get to the playoffs. The Minnesota Timberwolves just said absolutely not on both ends. They had some lineup things. It was funny. But we saw there is a level that the defense can hit. It can be fine. And if the defense is fine and the offense is elite, that gives you a formula. And if you get to the playoffs with these three guys, you don't really want to see them when they're at the peak of their powers.
Yep.
And so the first question I'll pose to you, Steve, is how much of that still rings true for you with this Lakers group right now?
I mean, I think watching the Lakers, you know what their formula is. I think the tough part, as we've gone to the second portion of the season, if you cut it into four, is we've seen the formula kind of work. We've seen the little habits be built early on as far as, okay, we're locked in defensively, we keep the pressure on you offensively, and this is how we have success. Now it's being pushed back on a little bit. And how do they handle this stretch? Because you mentioned it, you talked about Cleaning Glass, which, you know, of course, filters for non-blowouts. They're still seventh on NBA.com in offensive rating. They are 25th in defense. And I think when you look overall, their offense dropped in the month of December to 18th, and their defense also dropped. So which one is it? Because you can't live with both. This is a team that has a formula, but I think the thing we know about the Lakers, they have little room for error outside of it. So if the defense is not hitting a certain level, they're going to get poked at. Not just because of their roster, but just because of how they're kind of constructed. They have to get stops, get out and run, flow into offense, and kind of get some easier ones. Offensively, if your defense is bad, you are now taking the ball out, you are facing a set defense, and you are playing slower I think the one thing that you noticed, or at least I felt with the Lakers, okay, we have pick and roll with Luka. We have post-ups with LeBron. Obviously, Austin Reaves get well soon. You've been a good blend. It feels like there's some possessions where, okay, we're gonna run some elbow action. We're going to get some movement. 14 on the clock, and we've done a single cut. Okay, we're going to get LeBron in the post. We're going to cross screen, 12 on the clock, and now it's one catch. And I think what you've seen, especially against teams like Houston, teams like Detroit, we're going to mix our schemes up against you. So, yeah, here's a trap for Luka Doncic, but also here's a drop into a late switch. Here's just straight drop. We're not going to give you this. We're going to throw some switches out against LeBron James. And, yeah, he can attack matchups, but we're going to stay out of rotation and not give you some of the easy looks that you've been used to because of the pressure that your personnel can put on teams. And that's where it's like, okay, if you're not able to hit those notes offensively, because teams like, actually, we're just going to switch. We're going to stay at home. It's fine. And then defensively, you don't have this room for error. You can't get poked on both sides. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like I think to that end, actually, I want to start with the offense first, because I think that's where it super gets fascinating. I think I agree with you. One, the offense is going to be most important, largely because of how the roster is constructed. Like, you just have Luka Doncic, who is an offense onto himself. LeBron James, as he works himself back into rhythm, is still a supercomputer and can still navigate, you know, poke at different matchups, can play make all over the place if you send help, all the things. Austin Reaves is having a career year before he went down again, so we'll see how long he's going to be out, what that recovery looks like, what the reintegration process is going to be like for him. Because one of the things that I talked to you about earlier this season is, like, with all three guys on the floor, like, at the time that we talked about it, they were losing their minutes with all three on the floor, but literally every combination of two of them was just blitzing teams. And so, like, now you're pushing that timeline of working those kinks out back again. So I want to see what that looks like. I think I've been trying to figure out all morning how I wanted to phrase this portion with the offense. It feels like, in addition to defenses kind of dictating things, I love the point about let's turn some of this into late switches, or we can just play a little bit more drop because y'all aren't getting all the way to the rim. We don't really trust many of your three-point shooters, so we have a way of showing help, et cetera. It feels like the Lakers, by virtue of that and by some of the decision-making by their primary guys, it feels like they're just settling a lot. It feels like they are really relying on, I am so good, it really does not matter what you do. And I think there are naturally elements to that with Luka and LeBron, even at this stage, to where, yeah, you can contest the Luka mid-range step back. He doesn't care. He's going to knock these down anyway. You can contest the step back three from Luka. He's going to knock it down anyway. LeBron James, like, sure, you're in front of him. He's still stronger than you. You can sprinkle in these jumpers. He can get to the rim when he wants to get bursty. So, like, there are elements of that works, but what's made me kind of uncomfortable watching the Lakers of late is just, like, how much they've relied on, we are just going to win because we are better than you. And I think when you are now missing Austin Reaves, that gives you that extra wave. It puts even more pressure on Luka and LeBron. And as you talked about some of the stuff bleeding into the defense, yeah, it's a little more difficult for Luka to carry this usage and to knock down all these jumpers and to do all of the, you know, all the craftiness he takes for him to get to the free throw line and knock down all these step back jumpers, et cetera. Then on the other end, because the Lakers switch more than anyone, there's been some tweaks over the last couple of games I want to get into in a little bit. But because they switch more than anyone, it's a whole lot of, hey, who's Luka guarding? You set the first screen 40 feet from the basket, switch. Now let's get into the ball screen we want to get into. How do you want to defend this, Los Angeles? Would you like to switch this one as well? Are you putting two on the ball? If you're putting two on the ball in any capacity, whether that is intentional, like we saw in the second half of that Detroit game, whether that is we're switching, but the switching wasn't timely, so we got two on the ball by default. Cool. What does your back line look like? And all year long with this Laker defense, I have been peeved with what the back line rotations have been for the Los Angeles Lakers.
Oh, my.
There just is not a level of consistency there. And so I knew coming in the offense was going to be the better side of the ball and it was going to be more important. But the way this has shifted process-wise, like, I'm glad you brought up the point about their overall tempo in the half court. They are, I think, 23rd in terms of average possession length, which that's not always a bad thing if you want to grind out possessions. We are fresh off of talking about the New York Knicks. But one of the things that we noted about the New York Knicks is that they were, like, bottom five in terms of how quickly they're getting across half court and how quickly they're getting into their actions, and they were more middle of the pack this year, a step up. With the Los Angeles Lakers, they are 29th in terms of how quickly they get into their next action. That's not going to do it. They're in the bottom. They're dead last in terms of how long it takes for them to get across half court on average. That's not going to do it. And then when you factor in more switches, more late switches, the general shots that Luka and LeBron are taking as, you know, the stewards of this offense with Austin Reeves out, mm-hmm. the degree of difficulty is too high even for them, it feels like. And they don't have the defense to lean on, and the transition defense has been a chore this year. And so it all just kind of blends together. And I guess to toss it back to you, Steve, is there an element of, like, what immediately solves this for the offense? Or maybe not what immediately solves it, but what is some low-hanging fruit for them to grab to get the offense back in a better place? Because I think that is going to be their easiest pathway to fixing the defense.
You just have to get your tempo back up. It can't be this slow. And I think it's one of those things where, are we judging the Lakers based on who they are, or are we judging the Lakers based on who they may face? And what does that look like against those teams? Because you're going to face physical defenses that want to put you in a box and make you play slower. And if you play into that, now we're seeing, okay, this is what that looks like. This is what it looks like when, okay, we're trying to go to a cross screen for Luka to get him in the post. If that takes 12 seconds, how does the defense feel, right? If you get the catch at 12, that may empower the defense to double more, right? If we're going to go stack pick and roll for Luka, okay, maybe we are in a drop. We can sink in. We can help. We can force you to make a skip pass or hit the roller. We can kind of live with some of those decisions a little bit more because we know, okay, if we pressure, we get you slower. We're going to live against with you against the clock, as opposed to when they're kind of at their best, at their peak of powers, when, okay, we're getting out a little bit quicker. We're getting into stuff a little bit quicker, and you don't necessarily know what we're going to do. Like, I think the trouble for the Lakers is we've seen them add to the offense to a degree, right? Mm-hmm. In the sense that there are attempts at movement. They will go to elbow action. They will try and get some Iverson cuts in there. They will try and get some movement in there, some pin downs. The problem is if it's slow on top of everything else, that's not putting the same type of pressure on teams. And so if we can just full court pressure you and take 5-6 seconds off the clock, and now y'all are late to get to the to whatever you're running, whether it's a ram into a pick and roll, whether it's elbow act, whatever it is. Now you're up against the clock, and now you have to create a shot you don't want it, as opposed to you being able to put pressure on us because of the personnel you have. And so I think the double sword there is the fact that they need their offense to be at a certain level because of their defense. So it's just kind of like a swing factor as far as like, okay, we can poke at you on both ends of the floor. And now which part is it? You know, because if we're going to go ahead and mix in our coverage against Luka, you don't necessarily know when a trap's coming. So, okay, are you going to run pick and roll, or are you going to run, you know, try and get some movement? What are you going to try and do?
Mm-hmm. And I think quickly to your point, they are getting picked up in the backcourt on over 24% of their possessions as of recording. That is the highest mark in the league to your full court pressure point. The average pickup distance against the Los Angeles Lakers is a little over 48 feet, which is, once again, the highest mark in the NBA. So you're just seeing a ton of that. And so, like, that's where I get kind of, not necessarily confused, but I'm, like, intrigued with this. Because Luka in particular has been so good for so long, and, like, you do these things, he's one of the more annoying players in the league to deal with. Because you feel like we've done a good job, we switched this, we've taken away this movement, we got him late in the clock. Here's a jumper. It's like, well, darn. Here's a drive. Well, darn. Here's a pump fake. Now he's going to the line. Well, darn. But like now it's just like we've gone a little too far to the extreme, to your point. And so I think that is some low hanging fruit to grab. And actually, I'll just ask you outright, like, how have you absorbed this Luka season so far? There's a lot of conversation around what he is doing, how he's processing the floor, shots he's taking, all those things.
Is there? Have I successfully avoided this? Did I Eurostep all of that? Let's go. Let's go. I've liked the Luka season. I think he's been a machine for the majority of the season. The problem is not necessarily, I think it's unfair to say what does that mean for the Lakers, because Luka's been really good. He's really hurt teams. He's kept them in a lot of games. Mm-hmm. He's been lights out. The problem now becomes when you face the better defenses in the league, and they are willing to absorb some of what you do, right? Mm-hmm. I think Luka is at his best because when he can punish every coverage, And we know we've seen him do that time and time again. Doesn't matter what you throw at me. And we've seen a lot with this Laker season as far as it does not matter what you've done. I'm going to get to what I want to get to, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. What happens now if, okay, we'll live with that. That's fine, mm-hmm. Luka. Go ahead. We're going to throw different things at you, and you can make these buckets, and that's cool. We're not going to give you the automatic, here's a trap. We're going to mix coverages against you. Like, that's where I'm like, okay, what do you do with this portion of the program? Because traditionally, we've seen Luka's shot making turn into, oh, no, stop Luka, turn into, oh, we're just not playing out of it, and we're good to go. If it's now a mix, and it's like, okay, cool, you beat that drop, that's fantastic. Here's a trap. Here's a drop to a late switch. Cool. Do what you do. Now, there's no automatic for certain teams. So how do they balance that out? On top of, you know, if we're trying to put some more defenders on the court to be better defensively, oh, we're just helping off them. Make that skip pass. Oh, we're not. We're taking away the roller. Go ahead. We'll play out of that. That's where I'm just like, how do I judge this to the best of my ability? Because I don't necessarily think it's one person's fault. And I think, like, to say, like, Luka doesn't look to create things is a silly thing to say when you're watching the game of basketball. Because the attention he draws is going to open passes up. Mm-hmm. It's just, does that result in a open three-point shot? Does that result in a drive that creates some more pressure on defenses? Who's to say?
No, I think that's all fair. I think the one quickly set the table on Luka as of recording. 33.5 points per game, which is flirting with a career high for him. 8.2 rebounds, 8.7 assists, 58% on twos right now. Slightly below career high levels. It was above 60 earlier in the year, and we had the conversation about what he's doing on floaters and those short jumpers. Like, that has tailed off a little bit. 32% from three on nearly 11 attempts. And so, very good season overall. Some interesting efficiency things to kind of sort through, especially if we're talking about just what the last, like, 2 or 3 weeks have been for Luka Doncic. But with you, he has still been very good. I think for me with him, like, the shot profile has always been a thing that has kind of sat with me in a weird way this year in particular, in light of what you just described. Defenses mixing in their coverages against him and what Luka feels the solutions to that is. And with some of the personnel that he's been surrounded with. And if we're talking about growth areas with the Laker offense, I do feel like they can do a little bit more off ball. Like, depending on who's in the game, like, you will see, like, Jared Vanderbilt checks in. He's always looking for someone to, like, set a flare for or set a pin in. So, like, you'll see that with him in particular. But, like, I think wholesale there's room for more of that with the Lakers to help counter some of the help that teams are showing against the Lakers. And that should make life easier on Luka. Should make the reads easier for him. So I would like to see that portion of the program. But, like, if the three isn't falling for Luka, it does get kind of interesting in terms of what exactly the Lakers are generating, because it is a whole lot of mid-range stuff. And, like, there's just such a high threshold for that to be, you know, a function of a really high-level offense. And, again, they're seventh this year, so obviously they aren't bad. But, like, to get to fourth, fifth, third, something like that, you want to see a three-point shot-making perk up for him, especially since so many of those looks are self-created. And if we're talking about the whole bit with the Lakers in terms of what shots are being generated by Luka, yeah, you generated a wide open corner three. It's a wide open corner three for Jared Vanderbilt on this trip. Is that actually the shot that you want? And so, like, I'm with you in that regard. Like, I don't know how much to put on him. I do think he can operate a little bit quicker, to your overall point about the Lakers' pace. I do think a quiet portion of the Laker offense, I struggle to say underperforming in light of the injuries, but it could be at a higher level if they weren't turning the ball over as much as they are. And Luka has been a culprit of that. And in light of what the transition defense has been for the Lakers this year, they're like 18th in transition frequency allowed this year, but they're like bottom three in terms of the actual points per possession number. It's been very bad. You can't afford the live ball turnovers that Lakers are having. And some of those are Luka's trying to thread a needle that isn't there. You never want to hammer that too hard because of the passer that Luka is. Like, you do just have to, quote unquote, live with some of that because of how great of a playmaker he is. But there has been a turnover uptick. And some of these have been of the like, hey, what did you see there? I don't think we needed that one type beat. So, like, there's a little bit of trimming that Luka can have in that regard that will help the offense. I think if the three-point shot making perks up, a lot of this just feels better. And it feels a little bit more perilous for defenses, and that gets them right back there. But I go back to what you said a little bit earlier, Steve. Like, I think just how quickly Luka is looking to operate. is going to be the biggest thing. If it's just as simple as you inbounded to me, I see pressure, I'm getting it to someone else to bring it across and then get it back to me. And we can get into the step up pick and rolls or the span or anything we want to get into. I think it's there. Like the talent is clearly there for him in particular. But like those are kind of my offensive notes. Like it's.
Well, no, I think it's because of how much they need the offense to be at a certain level. It's easy to kind of just figure out, okay, what's happening here? Especially if we're projecting like, okay, you're going to face some audacious defenses that are going to try and poke at you in different ways. Because we've seen the positives of what Luka's done. We've talked about it here where, okay, you're putting two in the wall against Luka. That's an open skip to LeBron James. That's not how that's supposed to work. And now we see the other flip side of it as well. And when their offense is at home at a certain level, it puts them in peril because the defense just has such a small margin for error, Nikias. And the problem is, as the season's gone on, you want to feel better about where the defense is. Even if you're a limited defensive team, right? We can only do X, Y, Z. We have to protect this and that. You have to nail those portions. It has to be a part where, okay, we can only do this, but we live with the results of our effort, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are nights where the Lakers, we know, are going to get beat up in transition. There are nights where the Lakers are going to get beat off the dribble. Like, they have to be able to navigate those nights. What can't happen is you can't lose sight of your habits, and you can't lose sight of who you are, and you don't have the built-in, we can elevate this defense. No, you need to be nails at all the little things mm-hmm. to survive what you are, right? Mm-hmm. This is a team that has to be active. They have to keep the ball in front. They have to contain and contest. They don't really want to put two on the ball, even though they are now putting two on the ball more times than not as mm-hmm. things are. But it's like, you want to know what your variety is, like what's your scheme versatility to a degree. You need to have different things you can go to in different moments. And what is the Lakers' scheme versatility? If the switches aren't active and you can't keep the ball in front and the help isn't early and you get beat on rotations, you're not going to be able to live there. Like that's not that the rent's too high for you. If yeah. you are not, if it's all of that, multiple efforts have to be there. You know, it's, you can't, you know, if you're showing help late and another closeout gets beat, it's just a different layer for you. You have to dictate terms a little bit. And so their best possessions have been when they've had that activity. You know, they came out to start the second half against Detroit and they had a great defensive possession where they mixed different coverages where it's like, okay, we're switching with these people. There's two on the ball here. We're rotating behind it. It's in there, but they have to do it consistently. And I think the more we've watched them play, the more we understand, oh, you can't live here. You mm-hmm. can't operate in a scenario where you're bad defensively. Like, if we're not doing the little things, you're not going to survive. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of where I've landed at with the Lakers. And I think it's tough because you had so much success that put you in a certain spot in the Western Conference standings. If you fall to 5-6, okay, what's your path? We're back to that conversation. Mm-hmm. And then how do you elevate this defense in the playoffs if two on the ball has bad rotations behind it, if you can't nail the switches with everyone? Mm-hmm. Where are we at? If drop isn't an option because you don't have the navigation, where are we at? How do you you got to learn the lesson. Zone, they throw zone up there. Have you liked yeah. their zone? I haven't enjoyed their zone.
I'll be kind of like, it's one of those, like, I have been more intrigued by the fact that they have gone to it more than I've like enjoyed the actual execution of it. I think that's where I land on it. Like, I think the fact that they're doing more of it is noteworthy.
Yeah. You get to a point, and I think this is where it gets interesting. How much do you trust your identity? Because we talked about that earlier this week on the pod. Mm-hmm. How much do you trust what you can do? And how much do you trust in being able to do that over and over again? This is a struggle point for the Lakers right now. This isn't the high point of their season. Doesn't mean their season's over. But are you going to learn lessons to get back to where you are or back to where you want to be on both ends of the floor? Are you going to understand that, okay, defensively, we can't do this. Offensively, we have to be this. Or is this going to be an inflection point where more teams are looking and be like, ooh, Lakers are doing this? Update the scouting report. Next team, ooh, that worked against the Lakers? Update the scouting report. And now you're in hell. That's not where you want to be.
Yeah. No, I think that's all fair. I'll say, one, just kind of circle back a little bit. I am so glad that you brought up the opening possession of the third quarter against Detroit, because I had that one in my notes where I was like, literally in my notes, it's in there. After I saw that possession, I'm just like, okay, cool. They go veer for Duncan Robinson. Marcus Smart, like, stunts at it. Like, you don't get a shot. They flow into a pick and roll. They trap Duncan Robinson. Ball swings back to Cade. They give Luke a switch. Now it's a switch and double.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kind of flow. I'm just like, okay. Like, at the end of that, like, Jake LaRavia sinks to Jalen Duren, et cetera. Like, Luka kind of loiters. I would have liked him to get out to Duncan Robinson. But at that point, it's like two on the shot clock as Asar Thompson taking that shot. So, like, I got why he didn't. But it's like, yeah, man, like, y'all can do that. And, like, the second half of that game, before it ended up getting haywire in the fourth quarter, it's very instructive to me. It's, like, similar to the zone bit where it's noteworthy that they're doing more of this because they don't really want to do that. The fact that there was like, no, actually, we're just putting two on the ball. Like, Kay, you don't get to do this anymore. It's like, huh. Looked it up. Second Spectrum/Genes IQ tracks like blitz rate. I call it more so two on the ball rate because it's not always a trap with those. You look at those possessions. But it's a little over 12% in that game. And much of that came in the second half. That is the first game all season, Steve, that the Lakers had a blitz rate above 10.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, and that is coming off of the Kings game where the Lakers, as mentioned earlier, they have been the switchiest team in basketball for the second year in a row. They logged their, I think, their fourth lowest switch rate of the season against Sacramento. I'm just like, okay, this feels interesting. Like, to your earlier point about the navigations, like, okay, we got DeAndre eating up there a little bit, not quite at the level, but like a step below. And we're going to drop on back. We're going to trust that whoever's in this action is going to navigate Marcus Smart, if that's you, Jake LaRavia, if that's you. It's like, okay, we're getting a little bit more activity-based. I don't know if it's going to work, but like, it's intriguing to me that this is now the attempt. Like, it being this stark in terms of we're not switching in this game, we're now blitzing in this next game, coming off of that Houston game where...
Ooh, buddy.
Ooh. One, just shout out to the Houston Rockets. So they just played incredibly well. That was the first Tari Eason start, and I still remain intrigued with that. We'll have Houston thoughts down the line. But the Rockets got the Lakers out of there. J.J. Redick was very upset, mentioned the uncomfortable meeting that they were going to have that weekend and all the things. And so it's like, when you have that high switch game, you get beat. J.J. says this. And then in the two games prior, you were doing something wildly different than what your profile suggests. I applaud. We are looking for answers. But the back of my head, I'm just like, this is a lot of change for personnel that isn't great to begin with. And so I'm just kind of like, can they find a blend to where they get to find?
Well, that's part of the journey of the season. And you don't want to be in a part where you're searching at this point in the season, but at the same time, we have to, because it's not working right now. So we have to be able to find a way to be a little bit more moldable on the defensive end to find our answers and get back to what we've done earlier in the season and get back to what we've been earlier in the season. And so that's where it's like, okay, fork in the road. Which team are you going to be? How are you going to handle this? What are you willing to do every single night to put yourself in position? Because this Western Conference is unforgiving. It's unforgiving. We're talking about a 20-11 team. Like, they are not good. Think about that, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just because they've lost 4 out of 5. Now, the problem is the 4 out of 5, you lost Clippers, Suns, Rockets, Pistons. So now you got 2 games against Memphis. You got the Pelicans. You got the Spurs. And then you got the Bucks. What are you going to do in those 5 games? Mm-hmm. Can you put this back together? This is that part of the season. This is that portion of the season where you can take off or you can get stuck in the mud. So which side is?
And what intrigues me about that stretch of games, Steve, is like between the 5, I think Memphis is twice in that stretch, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. But all of those teams, they either have a guy or multiple that requires a certain level of attention, a level of movement that the Lakers are going to have to track, which puts the microscope back on the switching and just the general attention to detail. And I'm just like, okay, well, is your defense ready for what this is about to be? And this is in addition to, like, especially you bring up, like, the Memphis matchups really intrigued me in particular. Like, Memphis has just really caught my eye as of late in general. Like, John Morant's playing really well in particular. I'm really curious to see what those matchups are going to look like, because stylistically, with what Memphis wants to do offensively, if the Lakers are not ready for that matchup, we're going to be, the tenor of the conversation around them is not going to feel great. Now, to the flip side, like, there is still the general Luka plus LeBron of it all against that Memphis group. They have advantages. Those are going to be fascinating matchups. I guess I'll just kind of leave it there. But I will be keeping an eye on what
that is. Man, it's just going to be switching and everyone's going to yell Ja Morant for passing the ball early. But
what a fun time that was, man. Oh, I'm so glad we're past that. Goodness gracious. Well, Steve, before we get out of here, any other Laker notes that we didn't get to? I have a question for you to close things out.
But go ahead and ask that question, big dog. What you got?
Okay, last thing from me. As you're a step, most of the you're a step the Luka discourse. So kudos to you. Another part of discourse that you may have, I guess, missed or just have not been privy to, in terms of the roster balancing with the Lakers, there's been a lot of, hey, so what do we do with Austin Reeves then? Like, could he be the ticket to bring in better fitting personnel to kind of balance things out?
What? No. Have you seen him this year?
Yeah, but I think that's also part of the bit. Like, if your thinking is a defensive trio of Luka, LeBron, Austin Reeves is untenable for, like, championship-level basketball, like, you're obviously not moving Luka, and you're not moving LeBron. Like, Austin Reeves is just literally he's the best asset you have within that context.
I get the idea, but...
You're just like, nah.
You're probably going to keep him, considering... happy birthday, LeBron. He just turned 41, so I'm probably keep that Austin Reeves guy around for a little bit, see what I can do around it. The problem, like, yeah, you could get more depth, but our defense is going to care about the depth? And is it going to make you that much better defensively? Is it? I don't know. So let's take this awesome trio that we have that we shouldn't have and then figure out how to do enough things defensively, and I think we can figure it out. That's where I'm at. Like, I don't think you call Portland and get three defenders. Cool. We already don't guard your defenders anyway, so that's great.
Okay. Hey, I think that's fair. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that before we headed out of here. So with that being the case, we will continue to keep eyes on the Los Angeles Lakers, and we hope you keep eyes on this podcast if you're watching on YouTube. But keep listening. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we're going to talk about the Philadelphia 76ers. What an intriguing group we have in the East.
The NBA YouTube channel is live. The smartest NBA coverage on YouTube 5 days a week. Watch a Dunker Spot with Nekias Duncan and myself. Elite Hoops Talk. Great X's and O's conversations. Kevin O'Connor giving you that deep analysis and the sharpest hoops conversations you can find in the land. Every week, Tom Haberstroh and Dan Devine will be breaking down the stats that define the league on The Big Number. And plus, you get fast daily NBA updates and trends from Dan Titus to keep you ahead of the timeline. If you love basketball, welcome home.
And we are back with the Dunker Spot. And Steve, it is time to talk a little bit more in detail about the Philadelphia 76ers. You did tease on the last pod. You had some Sixer thoughts. We're going to save them. We're here now. As of recording, the Sixers 18-14. They are fifth in the East, 17th in offense, 12th in defense, 14th in net rating per clean the glass. That removes the garbage time filter. And it's hard to feel anything but positive about the Sixer season, considering all of the angst heading in. Because you did not know when Paul George was going to make his debut. You didn't know when Joel Embiid was going to play. And we were fresh off a season where Tyrese Maxey took a lot of steps, but there was just a lot on his plate. And then he ultimately ends up getting shut down. So it's like, okay, what is this going to look like if it is just Maxey plus we didn't know what the Vijay Edgecombe role was going to be heading into the year? It's like, what is this going to look like? And despite Embiid working his way back, Paul George working his way back, etc., 4 games over .500 with some signature wins to boot. And now it feels like they're starting to perk up a little bit, Steve, on both ends of the floor. It's an intriguing mix for them right now.
I have been trying to figure out what the Sixers are all year and how to discuss the Sixers and how to analyze the Sixers. But the problem that I've had, Nekias, is as I've watched them, and I keep going back to the Eastern Conference standings, and they keep hovering around this 4-5 mark. I'm like, wait a minute. Y'all weren't there before, and now y'all are just here. I think they're right now currently tied for 5. Now, it's the Eastern Conference, so you lose a couple, you could just fall into the play-in. But I'm intrigued with what this Sixers team is only because of how it's kind of pieced things together. We know what last year was, right? Wasn't great for Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Embiid goes down, PG goes down. They went, okay, we're going all in on Small. And then it's like, what is this? Well, mm-hmm. we can't do that again. So we know we have to manage Joel Embiid and get him through this season, make sure he responds well to playing basketball. Understood. Paul George, you got wiggle room to come back and end up being yourself. That's fine. But without you two, we're going to drive and kick. Tyrese Maxey, you are going to do all of these things. You're going to get pick and roll. You're going to get off staggers, triples, whatever it is. You are going to be involved. And VJ Edgecombe, we're going to have the spacing to allow you to get downhill, and we're going to allow you the room to grow and be a shooter. And we saw those two play well together. And then it's like you have the nights where, okay, I understand. You're going to more drive and kick. You're getting to more flow. You have more of an idea of what you want to do. And then Joel Embiid's out there. And it's mm-hmm. like, well, for me,
okay.
I look at Joel Embiid the same way I looked at Jamal Murray a couple of years ago. Do you want to drive the basketball? Are you rotating on defense? On those nights, I'm locking in because, okay, you're feeling a certain type of way. Mm-hmm. But you have to manage the injury. You know, you have to manage and figure out how to do it. That's just human nature. He gives them a different level of half-court execution on those good nights mm-hmm. where, okay, we can not only do what we're doing with Tyrese Maxey, do what we're doing with VJ Edgecombe, but also here's the ball, Joel Embiid. Defense, what would you like to do? Mm-hmm. Oh, he drives and finishes. We probably should send some help. Oh, that's right. That opens up a double team and we can kick it out. And now we drive and kick anyways. So let's just play out of that. I'm intrigued. Mm-hmm. Paul George, how are you managing coming back? Oh, that's right. We can put you off screens. We can bring you off staggers. We can throw the ball at you with the elbow. And it doesn't change who we are. And then we have Quentin Grimes and Jared McCain, and we have more players that are able to kind of, we haven't seen Kelly Oubre since November. Mm-hmm. So when you piece it together, I'm trying to figure out how much of this offense has set itself up to be really good in the playoffs. How much of this defense really exists? And is this now a team you just don't want to play mm-hmm. in the spring because mm-hmm. of what they've put together? Like, can they piece it all together? Can they piece the Maxey Edgecombe with the Embiid, with the Paul George, and now we're humming, and it's like, well, this is interesting, or is this just kind of what it is? Like, I'm mm-hmm. talking through it.
No, I think that's fair. Like, that's another reason why I really want to have the Sixers conversation with you, because I think throughout the year, like, we've talked about, well, look at all the growth and look at all the things that VJ Edgecombe's doing right now. Look at how Tyrese Maxey has taken yet another leap in the ways that he gets busy. Like, the off-ball usage for Tyrese Maxey has been one of my top joys from this season. Because you do just get the traditional, you're starting in the corner, you're getting a screen, or you're getting two screens, and you get a touch. Or if, like, Paul George is bringing the ball up the floor, or VJ Edgecombe's bringing the ball up the floor, here's just a wide pin down high, Maxey catching the ball on the move, and now good luck staying in front of that dude. And so, like, that part's been fun. But, like, his screening usage this year, like, I always focus in on, hey, guards are setting screens, inverted pick and rolls, whatever the case may be. But the way that they weaponize Tyrese Maxey in that regard has been a lot of fun for me. And I think, you know, one of my bigger picture questions is, like, how does Embiid slot in within, like, the Maxey and Edgecombe bit that you were hitting on? Easy way to do that is to use Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid together. Like, if we are going to get to some of these elbow catches for Joel Embiid, why not have Embiid at the baseline and Tyrese Maxey set the screen? And now you have to decide as a defense, are we switching this? Or, like, what are we doing with this? If you do switch it, Joel Embiid is just going to mash you to death and or get to the free throw line, which, to your earlier point, we've got to send help. There's a kick. And now they get to play out of it. If there's any sort of indecision, you can still throw it to Joel Embiid because he's 7 foot tall and he has an advantage. Or now it's just Tyrese Maxey jetting up the floor. You just don't know. One, I can't catch up with him, regardless of what he actually decides to do. But then from there, like, you don't know what path he's taking. You don't know if he's receiving another screen at the wing when he's lifting up. Like, it's a lot of fun. And so, like, watching them blend that together, I think there has naturally been, especially with some of the early Embiid games, there was a little bit of a hiccup. It felt very much like these are the Maxey possessions, and now we are slowing it down, and here are the Embiid possessions. And at the time, especially early on, when Joel Embiid was taking all these mid-range jumpers and was not knocking them down, or you get to some of the pick and pops, and on the nights where Embiid didn't want to drive, it is just very stationary, flat-footed three, and he has not shot well from deep so far this season. That's where I think some understandable angst came in. Like, okay, are the Sixers better without Embiid? Like, the answer is likely no. That is just a talent. And if you're talking about playoff projections, you do just need someone to be a hub for you in the half court. I think Maxey's going to get there, especially with the leaps that he's made as a foul drawer in particular on his drives. But, like, having Embiid certainly helps you on that front. But I think it was a valid question in terms of the overall synergy of the group.
Mm-hmm.
I think there should be fewer questions, or at the very least lower volume on that, as the blend is starting to feel better, as we're starting to see more of Maxey and Embiid used together on and off the ball. One of the things that stood out to me in, I think it was the Sixers-Hawks game not too long ago, it was similar setup. Embiid's on the block. It's Paul George is setting these screens for Embiid to get catches at the elbow. And it's like, okay, well, we don't really want to switch this either. Like, it's more size for Paul George compared to Tyrese Maxey. But it's still an inverted off-ball screen for Joel Embiid. It's like, well, I don't really want to do this. Embiid, knock down elbow jumpers, or he is a dribble away from the rim. And so, like, the fact that they are able to kind of piece this together, to steal your verbiage real quick, to where, like, the Embiid touches are feeling more natural now. The Maxey stuff still exists. The VJ Edgecombe stuff is still there, particularly late in games. I can't wait till we get to, like, the Maxey VJ pick and roll portion of the program. We could talk about that. But it's starting to feel better.
Oh, that's your bag. I know you love that duo. But I think for me, it's just it's an overall level of buy-in, right? So even, like, there's a play early in the second quarter, like 9:30 mark against Dallas, where in transition, Tyrese Maxey brings it up. And then he just kind of sees Joel Embiid has a matchup. He's like, hey, here's the ball, man.
Go ahead.
And Joel's like, nah, here's a back. Let me get a better catch. And then Joel Embiid drives, defense helps, it's an open three. And it's like, okay, we have a little bit of synergy here. So their ability to kind of start possessions off together and play off each other, transition the lineups they could put together where it's like Paul George is the four. And we have Quentin Grimes out there and Tyrese Maxey. And like, that's where in my mind, I'm like, there's more to this, I think, than people are understanding. But how much of it do people respect?
Mm-hmm.
That's where it gets interesting. But like Tyrese Maxey's been dynamite this season. Just unstoppable in like trying to figure out how to like slow him down. And there's not one way that he's hurting you. He's beating you in transition. He's beating you in handoffs. He's beating you in pick and roll. He's getting downhill and driving. He's averaging 30 a night. Like, what do you do with this guy, right? Mm-hmm. So he's doing that. VJ Edgecombe, hot start. Teams were like, hey, can you not do that anymore? And then he was like, actually, I can still do it. And so the volume that he's getting is paid off throughout the season. I just really, I'm understanding this group a little bit more. I'm respecting this group a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm right there with you. Like, I think, actually, I want to pause with Paul George very quickly because his integration, like, it's been a quieter conversation compared to Joel Embiid for, like, very obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it wasn't smooth sailing when he got back. At least in terms of the shot making, like I was pretty fine with what his actual diet was, how many times he was getting off ball screens, where he was getting his catches, general decision making, pick and roll. You could tell he's kind of figuring out, okay, do I actually have the drives the way that I want to? It felt a little mid-range heavy early on, but like I've mostly been fine with that. And so now when you have like the Atlanta game that I referenced and a few others where, oh, he's knocking down threes, he's heat checking again. We just kind of have a security blanket now. So we still have, to your point, we have Maxey, we still have Edgecombe. When Quentin Grimes comes in, he still is playing with a level of freedom and aggression. And if all else fails, oh, we can get the ball to Paul George 17 feet from the basket. He can go to the jab series, low cross, the music is playing in the background, etc. And he can still get him something. It's like, okay, this is cool. And so, like, I've been fascinated by just how well he's been able to kind of fit into all of this. And when you mention him being at the four in some of these lineups, that's where the brow really perked for me. Cause like, that was one of my questions heading into the year. And this is where I was like, ooh, so are we going to get like some Jabari Walker? We're going to get some Trenton Walker. Like what's going to happen at this fourth spot?
Shout out to Barlow, by the way.
It's shout out to Don Barlow. Listen, and this is why you watch Don Barlow, a fellow screen time recipient from me. But either way, it's like, okay, who's going to solidify the fourth spot? Like, is this going to be Kelly Oubre again with some of these lineups? Like, how is this going to fit in? And so the fact that you can now get to Paul George at the four, and he can hold up well enough. Like, I don't think he's at, like, the former all-defense version of himself. And, like, that's okay. If he can hold up well enough, and still hold up well enough in space in particular to unlock some of the switching, 1-4. And if he can communicate well enough to scram some of these smaller guards out, more so Maxey or Jared McCain when he's in, if you can do that, cool. Because quiet is kept, as we circle back to Embiid very quickly, the defense for Joel Embiid.
Ooh, I've been waiting for this. I've been waiting to hear what Nekias Duncan's about to say about this.
Like, similar to the Embiid on offense bit, like, we watched the drives. We want to see if he's driving, he's feeling good. If he's not, and his jumper heavy, like, he's probably just kind of slow playing. He isn't feeling great, yada, yada. To the defense, is Joel Embiid jumping? If he is, he's probably feeling good. If he's not, that's a very deep drop. This is a lot of pointing. There are going to be some openings on the perimeter. And what I've enjoyed as of late is that it's been less of the I'm 15 feet back from this action above the break, and I'm pointing and making sure y'all know what's coming. He's kind of patrolling again, Steve. You are seeing some ferocious shot contests at the rim from Joel Embiid. You are seeing the occasional late switch to where I can slide a couple times. Again, we're not going to confuse it with Bam, but like I can slide a couple times and at least give my guys time to kind of show some help behind me if necessary. Mm-hmm. And, you know, similar to earlier trends in Embiid's career, teams don't shoot at the rim as often when he's on the floor. And if we are like spicing up for the last like 5 or 6 games, like that's even more stark of a difference. Again, he's feeling good. He's moving better. He's contesting more. That stuff's been fun. It's like, okay, if Embiid walls off the rim, if we get enough navigation up top, which very quietly, VJ Edgecombe has had to do a lot defensively this season. I did not anticipate him defending number ones as often as he's had to this season. But he's been up for the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
We get enough up top, and Joel Embiid says, well, nah, y'all can't get down here either. I know the rebounds per game number for Joel Embiid is low, and it's lower than what we're used to. But like his presence on the floor, you don't get rim shots. You have to account bodies to him. Fight for these rebounds, other guys are swooping in. And like that's where you get Tyrese Maxey gets to attack early, VJ Edgecombe gets to attack early, Paul George gets to push early. And now it's Joel Embiid as a trail threat.
Yeah.
And you don't know what's going to happen from there. He may just take the above the break three, which again has not shot well this season, but you know he has it in there. It could just be one of those quick pitches to Maxey or Edgecombe or PG, and it flows to a pick and roll, which I'll quietly note. The screening for Joel Embiid has felt a little bit better. It's always been one of the inconsistent bits of his game, but I've enjoyed that piece. He's hitting people. He's rolling a little quicker. And that adds another layer to this early Sixers attack. And it's like, okay, I'm seeing it. But it starts with the defense is feeling better. And I think that does just give the Sixers a higher ceiling if they can defend at a high level.
It gives them more wiggle room for sure. And I think that's where it's like, okay, is that going to be good enough? Is the offense going to be good enough? Do we trust it enough? But then you get to that playoff lens, right? And I feel like they're one of those teams that have a, ooh, this could be even better in the postseason. Like, I feel that way with Cleveland still. I feel that way with Orlando. I feel that way with the Sixers, where it's like, I think this could be a problem to deal with down the line. Now, I'm going to take us quickly off track. I'm going to ask you a question that I've been wanting to ask you. How do we feel about the Sixers treating Paul George like late-stage Vince Carter and the fact that whenever he gets a dunk, they lose their mind? Now, I ask this question because vibes are important for a team. And anytime Paul George dunks, the whole team loses their mind as if they've never seen it before. Yes. How do you feel about that?
Steve, as a dunk stickler, I'm very pro get fancy on the fast break, all the things, right? I've had very mixed feelings about this.
Because how fancy you learned to get?
Well, here's the thing. Like, this isn't like Paul George specific. I'm just kind of laying the thing. But like with PG, like early on when he was coming back and he'd get like the random tomahawk or whatever, I felt a twinge of sadness, to be transparent, because I remember what the Paul George dunks were. Like, we're not far removed from like 360 in the half court from Paul George, right? And so like when the loud dunk for Paul George is just like basic one-hander off two for my 2K players, it's just like, I'm glad he dunked, but man, I miss that old PG. Fun 360 PG, etc. But to your actual question, to get that out of the way, like, it does just kind of signal the buy-in. And I think he obviously feeds off of that. And I think circling back to, you know, he's playing the four a little bit more, just what he's been asked to do defensively with VJ taking on number ones and stuff like that. Like, anything that gets him more perked up and more comfortable, considering like he's not number one option anymore, he's not number two option anymore. Anything that gets him amped up to fill gaps for the Sixers group, he is very well equipped to do so. I think it's helpful. So, like, it has been, to your point, like, it's been cool to see their reaction and the way that they're buying into him. Because I think even with the PG journey, with how he left the Clippers, the pod stuff after that, and everything like that, like, it's clear, like, PG does, like most humans do, you just want to feel wanted and appreciated. You know what I mean? Not to get too deep on a basketball podcast. But, like, I think that kind of chemistry building and stuff is important. And so the fact that they are embracing him, I think it makes it easier for him to fit in and do what's asked of him. And that's where you can you get that. And then on the nights where he really has it going, yeah, I'm taking 12 threes tonight because I'm knocking down 7 or 8 of them. I could be Paul George for this 8-minute stretch. All of those little things add up to making him more comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds weird to say, but it feels like they've built something where we need Paul George and Joel Embiid, but we also can survive if you're not all the way there. And that's probably not a space you thought you'd be in, but they've done a good job of it. The VJ Edgecombe portion and the addition of him just attacking matchups, like, it's obviously they have enjoyed the spacing to allow him to get downhill and drive. But kind of some late game stuff where it's like, hey, you and Tyrese Maxey screen for each other. And we feel like we have a mismatch. And y'all play out of it. That adds a whole different layer to the late game. Because normally you're thinking, okay, it's going to be Embiid screening or it's going to be Paul George. No, those two are going to go ahead and play off each other and make it tough and keep pressure on defenses. How have you enjoyed that portion of the season, guys?
It's been neat. I was like, ooh, yes, Steve, I too would like to talk about the end of Sixers Grizzlies. but no, like, it's been interesting and, like, getting the numbers for it. Like, they're not going to speak to this being a good thing, at least not yet. With VJ screening for Tyrese Maxey and pick and roll, 0.93 points per possession as of recording, which is, like, fine, right? Mm-hmm. With Maxey screening for VJ, it's 0.76 points per possession, which is just not very good. But for me, it's more so, to your point, the fact that they are comfortable going to it, I think, sends a signal. And then beyond that, like, the way that they space around it is really smart. And because both of these guys could just win drives, like, you don't need too much for them to generate something solid. That's where I go back to the end of that Grizzlies game. It's just like, okay, well, it's Maxey's turn. Shot. Maxey's turn. Drive and kick. Okay, now it's VJ's turn. He got a switch. I have a shot off movement. Or I can get downhill too. And it's just like, the seeds of this, like, I don't, like, the numbers are what they are. Like, it's just logging the possessions. But, like, concept-wise, process-wise, I don't really care what the efficiency numbers are right now.
Wow.
Like, the fact that they can get to this, or are comfortable getting to this, and some of the shots they are generating on these looks, I'm here for it. I will quickly say, I'll toss this to you, Steve.
No, wait.
Go ahead.
Before you toss it to me, I need someone to mark that down in Dunker Spot history. I don't care about the efficiency numbers from Nekias Duncan, and send that to me so I can play it before every pot. Go ahead. What were we going
to
ask?
That is amazing. I will say, to the late game bit with Tyrese Maxey in particular, because we have been very complimentary of the Maxey experience, and rightfully so. It does feel like it's still kind of a growth area for him in terms of, like, when I am choosing to be aggressive versus when can I set something up. I think that is just general for a team that is competing, because last year he just had a lot on his plate, but everybody was injured. You kind of knew what that Sixers season was. Okay, this is a good team, and I'm still the number one option, and the scouting report is updated, et cetera. And so, like, there has been some wonkiness late game with him, with some of the late game decision making. Like, does any of that concern you, or do you just kind of put that in the these are growing pains?
I think it's growing pains. I think there have been nights where he's been ultra aggressive and not settled for the pull up or the step back against drop or whatever coverage is shown. But there have been nights where, okay, I'm getting downhill, I'm going to turn the corner, I'm going to finish, and he doesn't make the layup. And it's like, well, I understand what you were doing, but you didn't get what you wanted. So I think it's just, okay, does he understand or find the balance between leveraging his speed in those moments, getting the shots that he wants? Because he's really good at it for the majority. But I think sometimes in late games, we've seen, now I'm turning the aggression all the way up, not getting a foul call, teams are contesting. So it's a good thing that you're driving, but are you finishing these baskets? Not so much. Okay, we kind of need you to leverage what you're doing all year into these moments. So it's part of every young guard has a different journey, and I think this is part of his. And I think he's responded as far as, if you're playing drop against somebody, I really don't care. I will take whatever pull up or turn the corner and do whatever I want. But in those moments late, okay, how much do the drives and aggression pay off for him, especially if the whistle gets a little tighter to where some of those calls you got earlier in the game, you're not getting So are you setting up? Are you snaking? Are you trying to get downhill? Are you hitting first? Like, I think that's just where he has to understand what that next step is.
Yeah. Understood. Just want to get your thoughts there. Just quickly to Tyrese Maxey clutch stats. 80 points during clutch time so far. 41% from the field overall. That's largely drug down because he is 5 of 20 from 3 in clutch time. And again, when you talk about clutch numbers, this is all going to be small sample stuff. Been 92 clutch minutes for Tyrese Maxey. But to your point, just, okay, what's the shot making going to be like? Like, I think for me, and last thing for me on this, because he's made these strides as a foul drawer, I kind of wish he played a little bit slower in the clutch with some of the downhill attacks from him. Because, like, he has gotten so much better over the last year and a half of, I'm going 90 miles per hour. I know you're kind of on my hip. You're trying to recover. I am now ripping through your chest and taking that bump because I am normally going to be smaller than you. And then that just immediately sells the foul. And I know, like, people don't want to hear about, like, foul drawing and grifting and stuff like that. But I do think he has gotten to a point to where he can lean on that a little bit more consistently when he doesn't win cleanly. I think some of the misses at the rim has been, you're kind of on my hip. I have a slight edge, but not a full one. I'm still just trying to get this bucket. And so, like, there are some fouls that are missed on those. But it's like, I think this is just your opportunity to just slow it down a little bit. Like, lean more into that.
Okay. Understood.
That'd be my only, like, growth area thing on that front.
I have one last question for you with the Sixers.
Okay.
Do you believe in this team come playoff time?
I'm not there yet. And I think part of it is, like, it's hard not to have the angst of who gonna be there once we get to April. Like, is it going to be the full four of Maxey, VJ, Paul George, and Joel Embiid, which to this point, I think they played 74 minutes together so far. Very small sample. Are we going to have all four of them? If we do have all four of them, are they coming in relatively healthy, or is this going to be like we've seen with previous Embiid runs and previous PG runs, for that matter? They're there and they're available, but they are very clearly playing through something. And, like, what does that do? And, like, even to the amount of switching that Philly would get to 1 through 4, like, does that get mismatch honey in the playoffs? And are they really ready to hold up to that degree against some of the opponents that they may face up against? Like, I do have those questions. So, like, I can't firmly stamp it as yes. I will say I feel better about them today than I did even earlier in the season when they got to that hot start. But I was more so, oh, this is neat versus, like, actually, you know, asking myself playoff questions with them. And so now that the sample's grown, like, I do feel like there is a blend here that can work.
Got you.
If they are healthy. So I feel better about it, but I can't get all the way there yet. Where are you at with Philly? Do you trust them?
I'm getting there. I believe they're a problem potentially in the playoffs because that's a lot to deal with. Maxey, Paul George, Joel Embiid. That's not ideal, especially if it's a 4-5 matchup. Like, the Eastern Conference is open too, so I think there's a higher ceiling there. But it's good to know that you have left the Sixers on red. You double tap their message.
Thumbs up.
Wish them happy new year at 6:30 p.m. the next day. It's crazy.
That is crazy. Oh my goodness. Love the New Year's reference there. But we're going to take a quick break.
DM scene 47 minutes ago.
Wow. Okay, anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to take a break. And when we return, we did have the 30-point game streak snapped a couple of games ago, but Jaylen Brown has been off to a ridiculous start. We want to talk a little bit more about how he's been able to get it done for a Boston Celtics team that is just firmly in the top four in the Eastern Conference. We'll be back after this break. And we are back with the Dunker Spot. And Steve, close it out on these Friday episodes. We like to do a little player breakdown. How about Jaylen Brown? I just apologized to him on the last episode of Dunker Spot. I was like, hey, he was like sixth or seventh for me as I was trying to figure out who my East starters would be at the time. Apologized on the last episode. Like, nah, dog, you're in. You're just in firmly. On the year, 29.5 points per game, career high for him. 56% on twos, 36% on threes, 78% from the line, getting to the line more than he ever has. 6 boards, 5 assists, also career high. Turnovers are up there, but a lot of playmaking burden for him. And he is recently off of tying Larry Bird's franchise record with 9 straight games of 30 or more points, averaged a shade under 33 points per game during that run. I have been super impressed with what his season has been. Like, the numbers speak for themselves. But heading into the season, we were both intrigued and a little bit higher on the Boston experience. But I don't think either of us had them as like firmly a top four seed in the Eastern Conference. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that front, so I shouldn't speak for you. I know I didn't see Boston as a top four seed heading into the year. Like, hey, this might be, they're going to be in the play-in picture. I think there's just enough there structurally. But Jaylen Brown said, no, I'll just take on more ownership of the offense, and that's going to be okay. And I think my favorite part about the Jaylen Brown experience, and it's more so through like the overall Boston context, they've done such a good job of making life easy for him in light of the extra attention that he's seeing from defenses. Mm. And I more so say that within the lens of how they're getting him his touches. He naturally has the ball more. He's running more pick and rolls, more handoffs, all the things. They're not just giving him a static floor and say, hey, go make a play. Like, we talked about his mid-range scoring a little bit earlier in the season, and we're certainly going to circle back to that because that's been a big piece of what the season has been. But it hasn't just been, hey, big dog, go to the elbow, get into your Carmelo Anthony bag and get you some buckets. They have been very intentional about using off-ball movement to get him touches and to get defense moving a little bit before he can attack. It has been a lot of, whether that's another guard bringing the ball to the floor, Derek White or someone, you bring it up one side of the floor, Jaylen Brown's kind of in the middle, Big's going to step up from the wing, we're going to flare you out to that wing. Now you catch the ball, you can attack immediately, you can shoot off of that flare. Or now it just turns into a step up pick and roll and I can get downhill and I can navigate in the middle of the floor, which to his credit, he's done such a better job of navigating tight quarters this year. And that's where the mid-range shot making kind of perks up from. But overall, like, Boston's done a really good job of setting up these touches. They've been very intentional about using off ball screens to get him the ball into favorable position.
No, I mean, it's been a journey with Jaylen Brown. If for any long-term dunkers, you'll remember I shout out Jaylen Brown's three-point shooting, only for him to shoot like 0 for 11, even the day before or after I said it. It was fantastic. But I think what you've seen is just decisiveness from Jaylen Brown. There's not really much hesitation from Jaylen Brown in what he's trying to do. I'm going to go ahead and put my head down and get downhill. Mm-hmm. But I'm also going to get to these mid-range buckets. So according to the tracking data at NBA.com, he's shooting 50% on pull-up twos. That's not easy to do. So when I have this space, I'm going to get to my spot. I'm going to make these shots. I'm going to leverage these threes that I will also take. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily at the highest level that we've seen, but it's good for him as far as I'm going to take these threes when I have them or let it fly. And now I'm going to leverage that into hesitation, drive, head down drive. And when he has all of that going, it's hard to deal with one-on-one. So teams are showing more help. It hasn't really affected his game, hasn't really affected his mindset because, as you mentioned, Boston moves around the court, but he's always kind of a threat to kind of get downhill. And I think the counter and the comfort that he has, because when you look at him, that right hand hezzy, that right hand gather, it doesn't really change between I'm going all the way or I'm going to stop and hit this pull up. So as a defender, am I working to cut you off? Am I working a test? Or is Jaylen Brown in control and leading the dance? I think more times than not this season, we've seen Jaylen Brown lead the dance consistently to get to where he wants to on the court. I think that's where it's like, okay, this guy's kind of operating at a different level this year.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think to that point, Steve, the pacing feels a little bit different for Jaylen Brown. He is more decisive, but also he's doing a better job of keeping this guy on my hip. And I can just raise up, or I can sidestep and get to a shot, or I can just get all the way to the rim and kind of navigate things. And that's where 5 assists per game for him is really starting to pop. And like, even with the turnovers going up, I think a lot of that is just a function of you have the ball more in your hands. The random nights where we're putting two on Jaylen Brown, it's like, oh, well, this is a little bit different. Or here's a switch, you get the attack. We're all converging on you. And like, having to navigate that, like, there have been some obvious growth areas for him in that regard. But the fact that he is playing a little bit slower inside the arc and seeking out some of these late passes. Let me toss these lobs to Nemeas Kata or some of these lay down passes to Nemeas Kata. I do have kicks available to me because of how he spaced the floor and our willingness to shoot threes. Like, it just feels like he is processing the floor better and a little bit more quickly. Because like, my thing with Jaylen Brown has always been, at least offensively, how quickly is he processing the floor? Talent-wise, he can put his head down. He can finish through people. He can finish over people. He has some really nice dunks in his career repertoire. He can do that. When the shot making is going, from mid-range or otherwise, he's very tough to deal with. it has always been, ooh, this is a lot of catch and hold for Jaylen Brown. You may have made that shot, but like process wise, hey, we gotta speed this up so Boston can really hum as a unit. And so for this year, the fact that he's been more decisive has been pleasing to me. The fact that he's showing a little bit more poise as he's dealing with more defensive attention has been intriguing to me. And so now you're getting the full package. Like you mentioned, the pull-up twos. He's shooting 39% on pull-up threes as a recording, Steve. Mm-hmm. Like that has, as some of my dear Celtic pals will quick to note, that number has always fluctuated for Jaylen Brown throughout his career. But like we are on the high side right now. So when you are knocking down these pull-up twos, we are knocking down pull-up threes. So like drop isn't super tenable all the time against him. And if you give him the space, he might just drive into it anyway. That makes life a little bit more difficult. And you can't just say we're just fully committing to Jaylen Brown because he is processing the floor well enough to where I can just make these easy kicks. He's sprinkled in some high level reads on top of that this year, which have impressed me. But like, again, you want to see more volume before you just stamp him as he is leveled up to like a B+ playmaker. But it's good to see even the straight possessions on film where it's like, oh, that's a nice dart to the weak side corner on time. That's cool. Like, it's just been cool watching him function in this way.
It's very funny that Jaylen Brown has had this type of bucket getting season and you are appreciating the passing because come on, man, he's third in the NBA in drives per game. He's also third in the NBA in made field goals from the mid range. Do you know how hard that is to have that balance?
Very.
It's not an easy feat. Usually you are taking the mid ranges or you are driving unless you're like Shea, right? Mm-hmm. This guy's doing both. He's actually made more mid-range shots than Shea this year. So, I mean, how do you kind of handle this kind of growth and comfort and confidence on the offensive end when is there a shot we don't think he will take? Is there a defense you can throw that's going to throw him off his game? I'm not sure at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I think the switch and double type stuff, or just in general, we're just putting two on you. Like, he's gotten better at, I'm just going to make the super easy relief pass. It's not always the quick one to the roller in that regard. But, like, he is finding answers to that. And this is where I kind of get excited for Boston wholesale, as circling back to earlier conversations we had this year. Like, Derek White wasn't making shots. Boise making them now. In addition to what he's doing defensively, Derek White's just playing really good basketball as of late, by the way. But now it's just like, okay, if Jaylen Brown is doing better at handling these like star type coverages, you're getting production from everyone else. You still just have Jason Tatum just kind of lurking in the background.
No
potential return. Like, no. I know you're at no. And no. I probably also lean towards, hey, big dog, just take the year.
No. But get into art.
That is get into art. So like, I think we're on the same page. I don't know what Boston is. We know Jason Tatum isn't. You know what I mean?
Play some DJ mixes. Get into reading.
Get into reading. It's incredible. But like, I think even if it isn't this year, just kind of bounce off of that. The fact that Jason Tatum draws as much attention as he does, and now you have Jaylen Brown who would be able to process these kind of coverages better. Like, it just feels better for Boston moving forward. But in the short term, you already mentioned the mid-range shot making. He is one of 10 players that have taken at least 100 mid-range shots. He's converting nearly 49% of those.
Mm-hmm.
Only Shea and KD have made a higher percentage of those shots among the guys that have taken at least 100. He's been insane. And like, this is the cool down percentage. Early in the year, this was well above 50%. And it's like, whoa. Jaylen Brown is basically Kevin Durant right now. That has cooled off. But like, the cool off period still being roughly 49% is absurd.
All right. I'm going to ask the question to you, Nikias Duncan, then.
What's up?
Is Jaylen Brown in the MVP conversation?
Like, I don't think it's out of the question to have him, like, fourth or fifth on some ballots, especially once you factor in some of the guys that are going to be missing. Like, I can't get to number one. Like, if Boston surges and they're the one seed and Tatum doesn't come back, like, it's time to have some conversations. Mm. But, like, I don't foresee that, especially with OKC still doing what they're doing with Shea. But, like, he should absolutely end up on ballots at this pace. Again, like, Boston performing to this level with the guys that they've been missing and Jaylen Brown being the literal face of this, scoring and scoring efficiently, playmaking is perked up, and it's not like we got this offensive growth, but like now this is the worst defensive season of his career because he has more of a burden. Like, no, he's still defending pretty hard and pretty well. Like, if we want to circle all the way back to earlier in the season, first game of the year, it is Jaylen Brown defending Joel Embiid with some of their cross-matching. I'm just like, oh, I didn't anticipate this. Now, has Boston dipped into that bag a ton as the sample has grown? Like, not really with Jaylen Brown, because they do still need him offensively. But, like, it's not like he's just been a sieve or he's just taking nights off on that end to do all the offense stuff. So there is a level of two-way impact that Jaylen Brown is bringing. If they continue to stack wins, and we're looking at, like, 36-5 for a top three or top four seed in the East, yeah, it's kind of hard to not have them in the top five, especially if guys are missing. Again, Jokic is going to be out for a month. I think Luka probably, back on pace now, or will be back on pace, but if he suffers an under injury, that gets tough. Wemby just missed another game, and he's missed some time. I think it's going to open up, and if nothing else, like, even if those guys are healthy, like, he still deserves to be in the conversation for, do you give him a fifth place vote for what this Boston season has been and what he's been able to do? I think it's fair to have him there.
No, I agree. I think he's in the conversation. I think he's played his way into that conversation. Boston's winning helps him. And, you know, I think all-star MVP, Jaylen Brown's been great, man.
Here we go. It's good stuff from Jaylen Brown. Steve, would you like to get into some unrivaled free throws?
Yeah, let's go!
Because the season opens up on Monday. I'm going to be in Miami. Very excited to actually get to be on site for one of these for the first time. Didn't get to go last year, but
dang, you didn't tell me all about the flight. That's crazy.
Hey, you got time, big dog. Got the whole weekend. You know what I mean? But no,
it's Friday. What you mean?
All right. Before I get yelled at, let's get into some of these. So, Steve, I got a question for you for each of these eight to close things out.
Okay.
At least one for each team. Might get a couple. But for Rose BC, you're defending champions. How much do you think they're going to miss Angel Reese this year?
I'm gonna flip that one to you. Okay. Do you think they will miss Angel Reese?
I think there are absolutely going to be some elements. Like, Angel played well in Unrival. We talked a lot about her growth as a shot creator during the inaugural season last year. And she wound up winning Defensive Player of the Year in the inaugural season. So I think going from that and her level of switchability and obviously her ability to end possessions on the glass, going from that to Shakira Austin, who has a lot of that versatility, not to say rebounding prowess, and to Azaree Stevens, who gives you more size and some shot blocking, but like the perimeter stuff may be a little hazier than Angel switching out the perimeter. Like, I do think it's going to take them a little bit of time to figure out that portion of the program. So I think they'll miss the defense. But I do wonder if, you know, the Shakira Austin drives, some of the mid-range jumper she gets into, the drives and the three-point shooting for Azaree Stevens, like, there's a way for it to, you know, be similar impact in the aggregate. But, like, I do think the defense is where you'll really feel Angel not being there.
Man, that Chelsea Gray, Ka, Lexi Hull lineup going to have you in shambles, buddy.
Ooh, buddy.
So don't worry about it. They'll be just fine.
They're going to get after it. Steve, going to Vinyl BC. What do you think this Brittany Griner integration is going to look like with this group?
What do you mean integration? Give her a ball.
Give her the I'm just saying, because, like, with Vinyl BC, like, they were one of the, so that's aside from our dear pal Zoe. We didn't have, like, official, like, pace stats for Unreal last year, but Vinyl played quicker and they really wanted to run in transition last year. And, like, BG gives you a different element in that regard. So I just wonder,
it's going to be fine.
Okay. Fair enough. Do you feel any sneaky MVP potential for Ryan Howard with this group?
Potentially, but I mean, it depends on who gets hot when. Mm-hmm. The MVP can get real tricky. I wouldn't feel comfortable predicting an MVP right now because you don't know what's about to happen.
That's also true.
You made the wrong person mad on night one. They become a legend for the rest of the season. Like, how are you gonna project that?
Yeah, that's pretty true. Hey, we will never forget the second half of the season for Chelsea Gray in particular. Ends up good, wins the championship, MVP, all the things. So we'll see. And as we move to the Lunar Isles, one biggest news out of this, no Nafisa Collier this year. Out 4 to 6 months. Surgery on both ankles. So hope just she's all first right. And foremost, just hope she is okay. Hope that recovery goes smoothly. For the Lunar Isles, who were the best team in the league before an early exit during the postseason, biggest question I have, just general note, is just like, how do you replace Nafisa Collier? Like, in a literal sense, Timmy Fakbenle gets the roster spot. But, like, that is a lot of bucket getting. That was last year's MVP. How many shots is Marina Mabry taking this year? In line,
don't worry about Marina. Do you not remember Skylar Diggins operates absolute? I'm an underdog. Oh yeah, we about to cook. And we got Marina and Rachel Bannon and Rick Allen. Yeah, don't worry about it. We'll be all right.
Are you ready for Leah Edwards to average like 15 a game off the bench?
No. because of the guard play. That's all I'm saying there.
I'm just saying, like, Aaliyah has some driving chops. We saw how well she played in the one-on-one tournament last year.
Oh, no, she's capable. I'm just saying they got shooters.
Understood. Well, speaking of, I'm glad you said shooting in particular. So as I move to Laces BC, I love this roster overall. Jordan Canada, Jackie Young, Brittany Sykes, Maddie Seegers is a newcomer. Alyssa Thomas, Nas Hillman, also a newcomer. Does this group have enough shooting to contend?
Won't matter. They'll play defense.
Yeah, their defense, it should be incredibly good. That's like the one thing I can kind of poke at them with. Was like, do you feel comfortable switching and showing help against them? Because they have drivers all over the place. Like, Jackie, Brittany Sykes, and Alyssa Thomas on the floor together is going to be wildly annoying for the opposing team. I'm excited to see that group.
They're going to compete. It's 3-on-3. There's always so much help you need show.
There we go. That's fine. As we move to Miss BC, who's going to start for this team, Steve?
I don't know. Stewie?
Stewie. But, like, I would imagine Stewie and Alicia Gray are baked in. But from there, you can go Arike. You can go Veronica Burton if you want to start with defense and have Arike as kind of your spark plug. You go Atlanta Smith if you want more size with the defense.
I'd imagine. Don't overthink it. Arike will be there.
I'm excited. Biggest question for me. We continue to keep eyes on the three-point shooting of Breonna Stewart. I was able to ask her about the shot during Unrivaled media.
Let it go. She's fine. She's a bucket. She's happy where she's at.
Hey, that's what she said. And hopefully we also see her let it go from deep. So we're going to see what it looks like. As we move to Phantom BC, Satu Sabli for the squad this year. She's still recovering from the concussion suffered during the finals. So hopefully she's okay. Tiffany Hayes, who played her tail off for Laces BC last year, replacing Satu on the roster. Are you going to have more fun watching any other team play defense, Steve?
Yeah.
Okay. I figured you in particular is someone that enjoys activity and ball pressure. And players defending other players that they probably should be able to.
Oh, don't worry. They got some dogs on this team. But, some other dog-related teams. But I'm intrigued by this team's offense potential. Okay. Shout out to Coach Paul.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of drives. But yeah, we were fresh off of finals where Dana Evans, I switch on to Alyssa Thomas. You're not going to do this against me anymore. Natasha Cloud guards literally everyone. I'm intrigued by what this experience is going to be like for Kiki Irifin. Had herself one heck of a rookie campaign.
She'll be fine. She's good.
Lot of bucket getting. It's more so exciting for me. Two Breeze BC, Steve.
My favorite team.
Your favorite. How many threes are we getting from Paige, Rakia, and Cam? Because I'm curious about their development / willingness in that regard.
CPR, let's go.
Okay, there we go. Actually, what are you most excited about that group? As you mentioned, they're going to be your favorite team in here.
The bucket getting.
Okay.
Kim Rick defense, Rakia Jackson drives. Page bucket getter. Yeah. Sign me up.
We got to get
Aerie turn the corner. Kate Martin.
Aerie seems very ready for this format. Listening to her during her media day. She's got chip on shoulder. I'm excited for her. Also, hope we get a Dom Malanga dog. We need at least one of those. And finally, for High BC, one, can anyone guard Kelsey Mitchell in a 3-on-3 format? I'm excited to see what that looks like.
You ask this about every bucket getter, you can. It's competition.
It is competition. She's so darn good. I guess final thing for me, how excited are you about these on-ball reps for Sonya Citron and Saniah Rivers in this format?
I'm just more excited about the defense from them, honestly.
Yeah, they're going to be nasty. Okay, I'm excited. All right, Steve. Thank you, Steve, for being here. Thank you, Dunkers, for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Also, if you haven't subscribed to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel, you want to do that. Catch all of the great content dropping there. You can follow me on socials at Nikias NBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. And with that, we wish you a happy new year, and we will catch y'all next week.